Welcome to Classics at Josie's Cafe. I'm Josie, aka Jose, or Hose B, whatever you want to call me. So I decided to get my buddies and talk about classics, that being classic shows, movies, etc. We have an enormous list of classic movies that we enjoy, as well as TV shows, and even some forgotten ones as well. We're looking backwards and rummaging through all the old stuff, along with someone that we feel are instant classics. An instant classic, for example, is like a movie like The Nice Guys. This is a relatively new movie. It stars Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. It's a neo-noir film set in the 70s, full of witty humor, mystery, and action. And it's written by and directed by Shane Black. This guy was known for Lethal Weapon. He also wrote and directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, so he knows a little bit about these buddy comedy movies. Well, this movie is a buddy comedy movie, but it's a little bit different. He kind of turns it upside down and gives us a refreshing take on the genre. Anthony Bergarazzi is also credited as a writer on this movie. This movie takes us far away from our costume heroes and into a dark, shadowy world filled with all the classic noir tropes that we're accustomed to in a noir film. It blurs the lines between right and wrong and follows our flawed heroes down a rabbit hole that slowly unweaves lies and deceit and corruption every step of the way. These are definitely some of my favorite types of movies. Noir is one of my favorite genres. So Bob and I talk a little bit about the Nice Guys and mostly complain about today's ridiculous movies. If you haven't seen The Nice Guys, check it out. It will be a refreshing movie, I promise you. Call it a diamond in the rough. This is a movie that's in between all these superhero and blockbuster movies, so it's a real refreshing movie, specifically because there's a lot of collateral damage, I guess you could say, in this movie, unlike other blockbuster movies. I feel it's a modern classic, and that's why we're talking about it today. All right, Bob. So you watched The Nice Guys.
Mm-hmm. I apologize. You told me that you gave me like homework to do that, like, 3-4 weeks ago, and I just finished watching this afternoon because
It's not a big deal. The main reason why I wanted to do this movie is because I've been in a slump, movies wise, because there's so many superhero movies out there right now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they're the big money maker right now. So yeah. Honestly, they're producing all the movies for the last, I want to say, 15 years for the last?
It's scary, right?
Yeah, I think since I want to start to say
Spider-Man came out.
X-Men.
Early 2000s. Oh, man.
Then, of course, the Avenger movies started to come out. Yeah. And of course, those made millions of dollars. And of course, Warner Bros. Started coming out with all the DC
Dark
movies.
Knight
and
stuff.
Of course, they were kind of terrible. I think the last one from this point, Wonder Woman, is actually the biggest hit right now, which I haven't seen it, but I'll just wait till it comes to Redbox, whatever.
So I've been kind of disillusioned because I'm a big film guy and you are too. You like to get into those indie films that hopefully we'll get into.
I like the weird films, yeah.
So, one day I came home and I kept seeing The Nice Guys. Just kept seeing it, never watched it. I don't know why, I just never clicked on it. And one day I just remember just thinking, screw it, I'm just going to put it on. And I watched it, and I was really, really surprised. I really loved the film. And I thought, this is how I used to feel back in the day. Like, when I first watched Pulp Fiction, when I first watched American Beauty. Like, there was films that moved you and you connected with. And it made me realize that there's a lot of films out there that are still like that. Newer films, but they're being overshadowed by
giant blockbusters, obviously.
Yeah.
And the thing is, especially with The Nice Guys, there's and I'm starting to realize with some people that there's people that just like very simple message, not a lot of thinking. In fact, if a show is too thought-provoking, or if it's too complex, they automatically reject it. Like, if it's too... And unfortunately, The Nice Guy is one of them. There's layers. Like, the first time I watched the film, I kind of enjoyed the film. And then the second course, after, for this homework assignment, I watched a second time, and I kind of realized how much stuff I missed. There's a lot of layers. You kind of realize that the, you know, you have to kind of look at that, and then you're like, oh, I'd never noticed this the first time. And honestly, that makes the film, the watchability is much more than just your regular, what's a good term for just a simple movie? Yeah, I guess just simple movie. That, like I said, it's a 23 flavors of Dr. Pepper kind of
thing. Right, and that's how movies used to be. They used to have, yes, a message, but used to, after the movie, I kind of feel that you used to have conversations at a restaurant about the movie. And now everything just kind of resolves all nice with a pretty little bow. And nobody has conversations. They're just like, oh, that's a great movie. Yeah.
I'd like to say that movies have actually, instead of actually having kind of twists and turns, and of course, like, a lot of people don't like that either. Like, and if there's too many twists and turns, it makes them think too much. They automatically don't like it.
Yeah.
But they've actually taken a bunch of scenes and they mash that into a movie, and that does not make... A bunch of great scenes does not make a movie.
No.
Oh, do you remember? He was shooting off the building and he ran the bit, you know, and then those become like the pillars of the movie, and honestly, you just end up with, sure, maybe a great action scene, but the rest of the movie doesn't make sense.
Because it's meaningless.
It is meaningless.
You know?
Like, I want to say, like, Ghost in the Shell. And did you ever see Ghost in the Shell?
The original, yes.
Okay, so the original and the remake with Scarlett Johansson. Mm-hmm. Granted, visually, it's beautiful. But then when you kind of get into the story, you're just... Well, they just took... They basically took Ghost in the Shell and Sound Lung Complex and kind of mashed the kind of the best parts together. But honestly, they don't really... The gears don't work. I don't think they mesh well. There's some stuff that are like, no, that's not how it worked in the original. There's a reason why they did this, and they just took that scene, transpat it into this film, and expected it to work.
Yeah, said, yeah, very patchy work.
It was beautiful, don't get me wrong, but it, overall, it's, you know, you could see the seams, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and when you see a film that has a lot of thought and time put into it, there's an overall, overarching sentiment that you get with the characters and what they go through. They grow on you, and you start to almost, if the writing is good, what's going to happen is you're going to anticipate certain things, and that's where the suspense is going to build upon. You can't build that type of suspense without you getting to know the characters and when you being fed certain information intentionally by the director, which is what, you know, Alfred Hitchcock does a lot in his movies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, going back to the other guys, it was really refreshing watching this movie, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it, because it made me excited, and I said, if there's a movie like this out there right now, what else is out there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what else is on there lurking in underneath it all? And I started to watch a lot of old classic films also.
So did you actually started, because I remember we were kind of mocking you when we were in the camp trip. Like, did you just started watching, I've never heard the term noir on so much on a camping trip. Like, so did you actually just watch the noir, Nice Guys, when you're like, you just kind of needed a little bit more? Unfortunately, as much, especially the Nice Guys, I thought it would have made a really good franchise. They could have made a couple more movies, and they could use the same characters, and they could probably go in completely different, like, storylines, but unfortunately, since it didn't do very well commercially, unfortunately, like, it was actually considered a flop, which, honestly, if I actually won Powerball, $305 million, I'd probably consider actually producing another movie, because it's a really good film, but unfortunately, as I said, it's not, but we do have 7 Fast and Furious movies, which, that's the important thing, you know, Vin Diesel's and Fast Cars.
Terrible. No, I definitely agree with you on that. With that said, I've always been a fan of noir films. With this, it kind of ignited my enthusiasm all over again. I think the reason I like noir is because, to be honest, it's Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, the original one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because that's very noir-based. And so, I mean, that's the main reason why I always liked that feel of it. And, you know, I got subtly into it, like, watching Chinatown, for instance. That has to be, like, the best noir film out there.
I think we're probably going to do a good podcast.
Yeah,
right?
we'll probably do that. And then from then on, I started kind of, like, researching where this all came from. And it came up from the Philip Marlowe books. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, detective novels, things like that. And one of the first noir films were, like, The Big Sleep with Humphrey Bogart, which I watched. And it's really slow-paced. It's nothing like today's stuff, but you kind of get an idea of what The Private Eye is and why it's a noir film. But for the other guys, this is a neo-noir film, so it's like the new noir. They're taking tropes from the traditional noir, and they're bringing them up to, like, a more modern setting. But they're always kind of bleak. There's always some sort of undercover stuff going on, like, I guess you could say, like, some sort of conspiracy theory or something. And it's kind of some shady stuff going on. And I like the mystery aspect of it, too, and the private eye, the idea of this guy who's not perfect.
No, I guess the flawed hero with the redeeming qualities, which, like I said,
Russell Crowe.
When you told me to rewatch the movie, and I kind of noticed it. Like, yeah, he's definitely not a good person. But he tries to be a good person.
Exactly.
Which, unfortunately, that's not to mention also with Ryan Gosling, which, like I said,
of course, he's the same way.
He's not the perfect man. He understands. But, you know, he's especially ripping, you know, people off.
Yeah.
But he tries to be, you know?
Exactly. And I like that about the title, The Nice Guys. It's very misleading. So the beginning of the movie, the Ryan Gosling, where this woman's telling him, hey, I haven't seen him, and he looks over.
I haven't seen my husband, how long he's been gone. Ever since the funeral, and then he looks over, and he sees the ashes of Mr. Fred Miller. Yeah.
And then he cashes in.
Then he's like, oh, yeah, I can start right away. You know?
Exactly. Immediately with that scene, I understood, oh, okay, I see what he's doing with this. And the comedy is great. I think nowadays you have this outlandish comedy that's so over the top that it's not really that funny. It's just obnoxious a lot of times. I mean, there's some funny stuff, but...
Last night, when I actually meant to watch The Nice Guys, I was at Nate's, and we watched The Other Guys.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell and...
Which is a common...
Yeah.
Whenever I bring up this movie, they're like, oh, yeah, I watched that movie. And they start saying...
I love Will Ferrell! And they're like, no, The Nice Guys.
Yeah.
And
then it becomes, oh, yeah, that's the one with Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah. I didn't watch that one, sorry.
Yeah.
Which is, like I said, it's a shame, though, because it was such a great movie. Unfortunately, I want to say when they released it, it was butting up another blockbuster movie, so it just kind of, like, sank into the waves.
Yeah. But if you really start to watch it, like I did, and it's kind of my fault, too. I mean, I'm one of those people that kind of dismissed it. But when you really watch it, you take the time to watch it, the performances are great. The comedy is awesome. Like, the part... I haven't laughed out loud in a movie in a long time. It was kind of like I always kind of get a smile, get something like that, you know?
Maybe a chortle or breathing, get that.
But when,
I don't know if the recording picked that up. I breathed loudly at my nose, that's what it was, just in case I yawed in here.
But, the scene where, so one of the detectives is trying to break in to this bar, and so he wraps a handkerchief over his You know what I'm talking about.
No, I just saw the movie, of course.
Yeah.
Then he, like, smashes the window. Then he's like, and then he cuts the bottom of the... He's like, oh, that's a lot of blood.
Yeah. The next scene, he just falls
over.
Is him
bleeding out in the ambulance and trying to drive him out.
Like, I actually laughed out loud, and I had to rewind it a couple times. It was just, like this classic scene that we miss out. We don't get those classic scenes as much as anymore. We kind of just watch the movie, we dismiss it, and we're like, all right, what's the next thing? What else do you got? But with this movie, to me, it kind of feel like it's so good that you appreciate these moments. The comedy is so... It's so well done, where the wittiness is not just being witty just for the sake of being witty. The writing is so well that, like, the wittiness is part of their character and moves the story along further. You learn more about what's going on with the wittiness as well.
And I have to mention, like, Ryan Gosling, like, there's a saying that, like, handsome men can be funny. And fortunately, it's... like Ryan Reynolds, you know, super handsome guy. Unfortunately, he doesn't do well in comedy because he's a little too good. Of course, granted, in Deadpool, they cover his face. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Same thing with John Hamm. I love John Hamm. He's a very, very good actor, but he's also a super great comedic actor. But nobody knows him for, like, I think the most funny thing I've seen him was recently was The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And thing before that, it was like with the crazy woman, 30 Rock. There we go.
Oh, 30 Rock. The crazy woman. Yes.
lesbian lemon fruit. and of course, they made him. They did the exact same thing where he was like a handsome man, but just super stupid.
And he played that up. Yeah.
Yeah, he played it up. And the thing is, he's a great actor. And of course, he's super funny. But unfortunately, if you're
typecast.
If you're a typecaster, if you're a little too handsome, usually you're the super serious comedic role. And like I said, Ryan Gosling said is, of course, I like to compare him, like, say, if you compare him, like, say, you watched him in a DRC Drive.
Yes.
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 Where he doesn't talk.
Which is another neo-noir movie.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, super, of course, like that. That wasn't funny at all. And
yeah.
Of course, the part, especially with stomping that dude's head in the elevator.
Oh, God, it's gruesome.
It's gruesome. Of course, I have to say, Albert Brooks, that was probably my favorite scene where he was...
He did such a great job, yeah.
Like, I kind of, like, think, yeah, Nemo's dad just killed Bryan Cranston.
And see, that's awesome, yeah. Which goes back to the whole crime boss thing with these noir films. Like, there's always something... a little bit off. You have these flawed characters,
and what I liked, especially like they said when you mentioned the noir film, I liked the in the beginning of the movie. It showed this kind of this
landscape.
This I guess they're showing that I guess health and wellness movie in that class where like
okay.
Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
Sydney has a bright towel. Bobby has a plain towel. Jimmy has a gay towel, kind of thing. And of course, it shows the little kid trying to hold up a rainbow. Of course, you know, during the 1970s, that was like I don't know if they still considered homosexuality a mental issue or not, because honestly, they did that back during the day. But they showed that super clean, like of course, I want to say the film. What I want to say, it's based what in like 1973, at least early 70s,
73, 76, something like
that. You know,
that.
So it's probably just coming out of the 60s where they're still trying to. They're still trying to support that super clean American dream issue, even though we're just coming right. And no one's talking about the Vietnam War.
Bunch of messed up time. Just dark.
Yeah, like people refer to it as the good old days, but nobody refers to it as the fact that we just came out of the civil rights era, you know, where people were just getting beaten in the streets. But they're trying to promote this super clean image, and slowly and surely you see that, like, they're kind of getting into the grime of society where, like, they're, you know, said they're talking about porno movies and, well, not the porno movies are really the grimy part, but the fact that people were being murdered. They're talking about, like, they say, like, the protests against the pollution, because turns out Detroit is trying to keep down the catalytic converter You know, it's
And that's another conspiracy theory thing going on there, yeah.
And, of course, granted, if you're actually listening to this, you should probably put a spoilers tag in it, because honestly, we're...
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they're listening to this...
Of course, the movie is, like, 2 years old already, so
it's
you
their
should,
fault. Yeah,
it's your fault. But yeah. And, of course, you kind of slowly, the fact that these men live in the outskirts of that clean image, where they finally get, they're into that that seedy part of actual life, like outside the 9-to-5 business world. There, you know, the guy lives on top of a bar. You know, what's the word? I noticed a lot of people get inadvertently shot in this movie as well. Like a lot of people will, while they're fighting, there is a lot of collateral damage, which that happens.
And doesn't happen in superhero movies as much.
No, it doesn't. Chris Grant...
Cities are falling from the sky, and it's like, okay, let's continue saving
that's
the
fine,
world.
That's fine, but he, like, okay, like, imagine, like, the Avengers. They're sure they're fighting Ultron, but it doesn't show, like, some old guy just lost his leg because, you know, a building girder just fell, and doesn't show him slowly bleeding.
And insurance
out.
Doesn't cover that,
no, insurance. Well, he's going to die, so...
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And then, of course, a homeless man going over... Look, checking his pulse, seeing, tell my wife I. And then, of course, the homeless man taking that dude's wallet and his keys. that would detract from the movie's. Ultron.
And that's a good point. That's the other thing I want to talk about. I guess why I enjoy this genre so much is because, sure, it's sensationalized a lot of the times, right, mm-hmm. with everything that they're doing. But there's some sort of truth to the humanity of the stuff that's going on. Like, there has to be some truth to the corrupted politician. You know, there has to be some sort of truth to, you know, the private eye who, you know, doesn't have their stuff together, but yet he's doing his best to make something happen. You know, like, these are real people portrayed in a real way versus this happy-go-lucky guy that gets it right every single time.
Or I would even say the other way around, of this, the terrible criminal who is bad in every other way and deserves to die. Like, you know, even though no one tells about, like, you know, after that criminal, yes, maybe he just did poison the city, but he goes home, kisses his wife goodbye, you know, hello, pet, you know, he plays with his dog for a little bit. You know, there's both sides of that human aspects. Even though, sure, that might be a bad guy, but he's still a human, though. That guy still has a family.
And he has a reason why he did what he did.
He has, you know, he's... Yeah, there's... Yeah, there's that... There's no such thing as that black and white.
There isn't. And I think the noir film kind of, in my opinion, kind of shows the human side of everything. Like you said it, the villain... He's just a normal guy that decided to just cross the line. You know, in the movie The Long Goodbye, it's mm-hmm. a Philip Marlowe movie in the 70s, also just coincidentally, but this was actually filmed in the 70s. Spoiler alert, okay? His best friend goes to see him in the beginning of the movie, and he kind of... he has like a bowling bag with him, and he had it out with his wife, and then he just flees town. He's like, hey, can you drive me to Tijuana? So the private eye takes him to Tijuana, drops him off, and then the whole rest of the movie, he's just trying to figure out why they think he killed his wife. Well, because he actually did. You know, that's just the movie. He goes through all these obstacles to try to figure out the truth, and he did. And then he goes confronts him at the end of the movie. Well, because... At first, you kind of think, oh, well, that's kind of crappy, you know, the way it ended. But then you start thinking about it, and it's like, no, like, why wouldn't he do it? You know, that's just showing that anybody's capable of doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just you decide if... You decide your choices. You make the choices, and this guy just made a really crappy choice, really.
Yeah.
And in these noir films, like, I watched The Big Sleep as well... even Chinatown kind of portrays us human beings as how much of a monster you can be. Kind of feel like that's what these noir movies are telling you. They're kind of showing you a human side that nobody likes to really see. And they kind of explore it in so many different ways, which is what the other guys do. And they're and you brought it up really, really well when you were talking about the 70s. Yeah, we're trying to portray each other as this clean-cut society, but I don't think there's a mystery whenever they bring up Nixon.
No.
You know, whenever they're telling them the story about Nixon, and
I always like how they say, like, that's when America lost its innocence. Like, I like it, like, no, it's not really. That's just, that's when people started smelling the coffee. I mean, though, granted, I don't know. I kind of feel like a lot of people, though, they'll forget, like, you know, they forget about history. And like I said, though, like, they'll just try to revert. Like, honestly, it's kind of like right now where people are kind of like, and of course, I know I don't, this general is a rule, we don't like to bring up politics. But they'll start kind of like reminiscing about the Bush years, and they're like, oh, back, remember those days? Like, no, those days were horrible. Granted, but like I said, they tend to whitewash them. They don't, kind of don't remember the bad stuff that actually did happen.
Same thing when somebody passes away.
Yeah, they're like, oh, do you remember? No, dude, that guy
was a dick.
That guy was a dick. He died a dick. He died doing a dickish thing. Just because he's dead doesn't make him any less of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Which makes me think, I don't think it's a... Oh my gosh. So much goes into the script and how it's written. You know, him talking about Nixon being set in the 70s, to me, I don't feel that it's just this happy-go-lucky thing that they came across. Throughout the whole movie, Ryan Gosling's character is trying to keep his young girl...
His daughter safe.
His daughter.
Yeah.
You know, trying to keep her from noticing a lot of these things. And as a young girl, I mean, she's gonna eventually do it. She ends up going to the party, sneaking out, and Russell Crowe tries to protect her, too. And...
It's actually that one part of the film, like, kind of like a okay when there she's trying to flee that party with Amelia, and Blueface, who's chasing him down, he gets hit by the van, and she's like, of course, like, being a girl, she's like, no, we had to help him, we have to make sure he's okay. Amelia takes off, Russell Crowe goes, here, go flag a car down and see if you try to get help. And of course, nowadays, you know, his daughter would have just called him the cell phone, but back in the 70s, obviously, that's not going to happen. Of course, granted, then Russell Crowe was like, oh, we're all going to die sometime. Then strangles the Blueface. And, of course, she goes over and she goes like, oh, is he okay? He's like, no, he didn't make it. And, of course, she asked him later on in the movie, did you kill that man? I was like, no, he didn't. No, I didn't. All right, good, because wouldn't be a very good person. Of course, granted, you don't know if she knows that he's lying, or the fact that he's lying to protect her from the terrible truth.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, later in the movie when where Russell Crowe's strangling John Boy.
The climax of the film.
Yeah, she's like, if you kill him, I'm never going to talk to you again. And of course, I guess you'd say that would be a redeeming quality. Didn't decide to kill the assassin. But honestly, yeah, that's kind of the theme of the movie, of just doing maybe the worst to protect the people you love. And of course, I don't know where you're going with this, but the fact that, you know, I don't even know if it was not killing the assassin would be like redemption. Because honestly, the guy's an assassin. He's probably gonna kill again. But in that point in the movie, that was the redeeming quality of not killing the assassin.
Well, because, you know, he sees the innocence of what she I guess she means she's the innocent one here, and he doesn't want to kill that off, at least not yet, I guess.
Yeah, I guess she doesn't have to see a man die, you know.
Yeah. So, and also Ryan Gosling redeems himself because he's able to go get what he has to get.
I actually rewatched that part twice. He has that tattooed on the man's hand that you will never be happy.
Well, he writes it, yeah.
Yeah, does he write it?
He writes it.
I assumed it was just tattooed on his hand.
No.
Because at the end of the movie, he tries to pick up that the reel and it's hot and it burns them.
Oh, maybe it is. Yeah,
yeah, I think it's tattooed. Okay. And it burns them, and of course it burns off the never part. That's why it's all like splurched out, and said like, you'll be happy again. And that was like kind of like the redeeming feature, you know, his redeeming moment.
And I guess you're right about that. I really like this character and the way that they wrote him, because you see this guy and you see him kind of this shiesty detective guy, and he's a big alcoholic, and
I kind of that was probably the anti-redeeming part of it, the fact that Russell Crowe was probably like a sober, and now then he started drinking at the end of the movie. I thought that's not very like redeeming. That's just him giving up on. That's what I thought at the end of the movie.
Well, I'll get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
But with Ryan Gosling, you kind of see this as this bumbling fool. Like, why is he doing this? And then you find out he has a daughter, and then his daughter's the one pushing him to do the right thing, because she sees him as someone potentially good, someone that can do good in the world. And she even calls him out whenever he's ready to just throw in the towel.
He is the world's worst detective, so.
True. But you see why he's doing it. He's doing it, you know, for her. And then you find out about his wife.
Yeah.
And then you find out about how he can't smell. And the tragedy, it's funny, right? Goes back to the wittiness. It's funny, but it's, you learn a little bit more about him and why his wife died. And it's a tragedy. And then you learn, okay, why he's doing this, which leads to the final outcome where he finally does something good, you know? And he kind of proves himself. Is, you know what? I'm not that bad. I could do something. You know, I can do this. And I like that. I like that. Goes back to the flawed private detective. Like, this guy's a flawed private detective, but gets it done. And gets it done for the right reasons. So they lead into the ending. If you have to understand, Russell Crowe's character, obviously, is kind of like a seesaw, right? Because when he comes in crashing in the beginning of the movie, going after Ryan for information, he's just the man. You know, he's just like, you know, he's the real deal. But it's kind of like that feeling where you see too much, you learn too much, and you're kind of just jaded about how things are. I think that's why he leads to, I'm just going to have a drink now, I need to cope with this kind of thing. Where Ryan is the opposite. He makes a whole advertisement for their private eye thing and everything. So he's on, like, cloud nine. Because, in my opinion, Russell Crowe's character is a real deal. He's always ahead of Ryan. And Ryan's always going to be a little bit behind in regards to what they see in the world. If you get my drift.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's not a perfect ending if you start to think about it.
No, it's not. Of course, it's kind of one of the things that actually, when I first saw the movie, I was like, well, that's, nothing really got resolved, actually. It was, but in real life, nothing really is. Nothing does have a bow.
And that's a noir film. At the end of the movie, nothing really gets resolved. Maybe one person might get what they want, but you're supposed to feel like conflicted at the end of the movies, most of them, if it's a good noir movie. But it talks about the human condition in movies in general, you know, and talks about how complicated things really are. They're not perfect. I think that's why the noir, there's a really big chance for this noir genre to just skyrocket, in my opinion.
You think so?
Because of what's going on now, specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's always a mirror in society and what's going on. And if you think about it, it started in the 40s. So just think a little bit, well, even earlier, like 30s and 40s.
Yeah, because during the, well, like, it was a precursor to the, you know, to the war. We might be going into war now, so. Because I always thought it's kind of, I was going to bring up the example of Dodgeball. Of course, I couldn't tell when it was made, but originally for Dodgeball. The average Joes, they were gonna lose. Like the part where I guess where Ben Stiller hits Vince Vaughn with the ball, and they lose. That was supposed to be the original end of the movie. That they just lose, and the director's like, well, that's real life. Like, people lose. It's not always, and that tested so poorly that they reshot the ending of where his foot was over the line, and that's why they'd read it so it would be like a happy ending. Because the fact that it really didn't, nobody liked that. Nobody liked the whole, they went through this whole thing just to be let down of the average Joe's losing everything and Global Gym winning, which honestly would be a more realistic ending, but nobody watches movies for them to be realistic. Like, I actually almost bring the example of my sister. I don't know if you've ever seen Logan. Have you seen Logan yet?
Yes.
Okay. And see, Logan, I'd like to argue the fact that Logan, if it didn't have all the crazy superhero shit in there, it would be just as good as a film. But it was just like a struggle of a man who's struggling with his own mortality, struggling with his father's mortality, finding out that it's a daughter, them trying to get out of a potentially dangerous situation, and then him ultimately dealing with his own mortality and dying. And my sister said she didn't like it, because she's like, oh, but he dies and he's weak, and it's like, yeah, but now he's the most human he's ever been. That character is way more relatable than a man that can't die, who's could just run off and kill 50 dudes and not worry about being shot. But now he's, like I said, he's way more, I guess the term would be, relatable. I didn't say it's the best film like they've made concerning this franchise, because the other shit's like, oh, the government's about to get you, crazy shit, and stuff that's really not really relatable. This, like I said, like they deal with end of life issues, hero mortality, what it means to be a father, far more relatable issues than, like I said, being chased by giant government robots.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course my sister didn't like it because the fact that she wanted the crazy, to the real shit, you know, thing, you know, Logan, of the fact that eventually we're going to die. And that's it.
Well, you know, going back to what we were talking about in the beginning, that's what films used to mean to people. They used to, like, create conversations. If you watch a Stanley Kubrick film, every time you watch it, you're going to get different conflicting thoughts. You're going to get, hopefully, really good conversations with your friends about what you just watched. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what films used to be. At least that's what films are to me. And I guess it's okay to have everything. You know, I don't want to be a snob here, but now you go to a Steven Spielberg movie, and he kind of gives you all the resolve you need, which is fine. Like, he's a really great filmmaker too. He's not Stanley Kubrick though. Stanley Kubrick wanted you to think. He wanted to challenge you and wanted to say, okay, what did you think about it? He's not going to tell you everything. It's kind of like, you know, you watch a movie and you have that friend that tells you, oh, every single second, did you miss that? This means this. Have you ever had that friend?
No, I never had that friend at all. I always had the friend who was like, so what's going to happen? I don't know. You need to watch the movie.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen now? I don't know. You need to watch the movie, because I don't want to fuck it up for you. You need to watch and experience it like the way I did, kind of thing. Because like I said, you need to go on that roller coaster ride. Yes. And understand the point of it.
Exactly.
Why am I going to bother telling you, why even watch the movie if I'm going to tell you, oh, by the way, he dies at the end and nothing happens.
Exactly. And I think that's what's going on with a lot of these blockbuster movies. Is that, I mean, you can just tell by the title, The Babysitter. Oh, I wonder what this is going to be about. Remember, like, you used to watch a movie and you had to watch the movie to see what the title's about?
I have a test. If you have to watch the trailer, and of course usually trailers are within 30 seconds, right? If you could figure out the plot in the trailer in 30 seconds, it's a terrible movie. And it's never failed me. And of course, granted, if you could watch a trailer and you're still baffled by that trailer, I'm like, yeah, you know, that seems like a good movie. You can't explain the plot of the movie within 30 seconds. Then maybe it's worth watching.
Yeah.
Unless it's a really terrible trailer they just showed you. But honestly, but if they... I remember one time, It was The Island with Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson. And they actually told you the twist of the movie.
Oh, geez.
Like, did you ever see that movie? Okay, well, if you haven't seen that movie, I'm going to spoil it for you. At the beginning of the movie, they were telling everybody there were survivors in a post-apocalyptic world. And it turns out they're just an organ farm for rich people, basically. And that's how they kept everybody inside. They told everybody it was like because basically they're clones of these rich people. And the way they kept them inside, they told that the world was irradiated. But they told you that in the trailer, that, oh, I'm a clone. No, you weren't supposed to know that. Imagine if you're watching Mad Max.
Yeah.
Right? And then they told, imagine you saw like a trailer for a movie, Mad Max. Oh, it's a post-apocalyptic. And like, oh, no. It turns out they turned Australia into a giant jail. And it turns out the world's normal on the outside except Australia. You know, like, what? Like, that's, I know that. No, maybe that's, we should make that movie. That sounds like a really good movie. Like, everybody thinks it's a post-apocalyptic movie and turns out Australia is just a jail. Yeah.
That's really funny. I go trailer watching sometimes, you know, because you already seen the movie. Okay, I know what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. But not with there's certain movies that if you watch old Alfred Hitchcock trailers,
mm-hmm.
fantastic. I saw the Rear Window one, because I'm getting Dustin to go watch it. Right.
Good luck with that. No, you know, I love you, buddy, but you're just terrible to watch a movie with. You're just
so so I'm gonna I decided to watch the trailer for it, and the trailer was genius because he's just he walks you through what the movie might be or might not be, and he's making you question.
Okay,
you know, instead of. They did a modern trailer of Rear Window, which was horrible, because it just told you the whole movie. But the person made a modern trailer to show you how crappy trailers are nowadays compared to the original ones. Because the original ones, Alfred, he's just like stringing you along. I'm talking like I know him. Hitchcock is just stringing you along and saying, "Ooh, what do you think this might be?" And then when you get there, you see it, and you're just like, "Oh," because you're supposed to question things. And he's pointing the camera where he wants you to, what he wants you to see the whole time. And that's the thing, that's a movie why I'm making him watch first, because he guides it so beautifully that everything you see, you're supposed to see, you know. And his movies aren't big on dialogue, they're more about perception and body language and actions, and that's how movies are supposed to be. And I kind of, now they have a lot of cheap dialogue that moves action along, and that's the most stressful. You know, they'll have somebody in the car saying, "Oh my God, well, James just died. You know what that means? It means we're all fucked. And so now we have to go get this magical key so we can get this other car so we can drive and whatever."
My favorite, or actually might not favorite, the worst one, is like someone explains it, okay, blah 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 blah, 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 and this is what they, for people who speak English, we have to take this and put into that, like that's that is the laziest way of like just sum it up. I wish they would just say that. Okay, so what do we have to do? Like, yes, I'm just admit you're too stupid to know what he's talking about, and you just want a brief summary. Just say that, not for people who speak English, because I'm too dumb to understand what you're saying. And you see that in a lot of, like, English doc, English. Like, just explain it to you, man. Like, that's just, I don't know. Someone pointed that out to me. Now, I hear that and it infuriates me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, of course, like you said, though, just poor dialogue. That's basically what it breaks down
to. And in The Other Guys, every dialogue is perfect. Like, I have to say that. It is perfect. Like, when Russell Crowe comes in and he's going against Ryan Gosling, he's trying to get information out of him, you automatically, he's strong-arming him.
And he's all, he just gives it up and it's like, really? You just gave it up that easily? Like, you're protecting your client. Well, I made a decision, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, my favorite part of the scene is like, when you see the doctor, tell them it's a spiral fracture. Then I'm like, no, no, no. Which, honestly, that's how people are going to react after you didn't tell them you're going to break their arm. Just, no, no, ah! You know, of course, like, Ryan Gosling makes the best crying sound. Which, like, he does that a couple times in the movie, which it's awesome.
And it's the perfect way to introduce these characters, because now you get to see how they are, like, who they are, and, you know, you don't have to have some shitty narrator saying, and now this is a lazy bumpkin who dumb-witted private eye who is lazy. Like, you know by body language what's going on there, you know? It's, to me, that dynamic is perfect. I mean, Russell Crowe, I loved him in this movie. I think him and Ryan are a really great pair. Like, they just, the chemistry is, like, awesome.
Well, no, they're like I said, they're very complimentary. Yeah. You know, just Russell Crowe's that hard-edged, you know, detective. And of course, Ryan Gosling, granted, he's sleazy, kind of a coward.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess, I don't know, would you describe him as positive? Like, he's a little bit more lighthearted.
Who?
Ryan Gosling.
Surprisingly enough, I see Russell Crowe is a lot more lighthearted, only because he means well, but he's doing what he has to do. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He has to break this guy's arm. Like, but at the end, he feels bad. He's just like, you know, just when you go to the doctor, tell him this is what's wrong with you. Like, he means well, but he knows he has to do this.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't trust this guy.
Well, honestly, the only reason he broke Ryan Gosling, because he didn't have to. He just did it the fact that since Ryan Gosling tried to shoot him.
Oh, true, yeah.
That was the message. That was the message. Yeah. Of course, granted, and I was thinking, like, even though you're a friend, I owe you a bullet to the foot. Kind of, you know, that's how I would have figured out, like, it's...
Which is old noir stuff.
Which is tit for tat. Either I break I hit your arm with a baseball bat, or I put a bullet in your foot. Either way, you owe me one, kind of thing.
And then they meet at the diner later on, and Ryan is just like,
oh, when he's on the shitter, he's got the 38. Yeah. And of course, like, that's it. Like, Ryan Gosling, that guy has awesome comedic timing. Yeah. He's like trying to open the door.
Yeah,
and it's like slamming.
Yeah.
Like, while the that's
Russell's like, really, this is what you're gonna do right now?
Turn around. There's a mirror I can still see. Close your eyes.
Because, you know, Ryan Gosling's not that bright in this movie.
No, he's not.
Yeah, and it's just like the comedic factor. So that's the thing, is because he's been in the game longer in this movie. I wish I would have written their character's name, but you can tell, like, he knows what to do.
Jack Healy,
yeah. When they go to the party, mm-hmm. and...
Which, oh man, I was thinking, I only wish I had the kind of pull to get into those kind of parties. Dude. With crazy... Well, of course, granted, it is in the 1970s where they're just, like, getting trashed and just... But anyway, continue. I'm sorry. Something I thought about.
Well, he kind of tells him that you smell that. And he's like a detective that can't smell.
Yeah.
Like, he's Ryan Gosling's character is way over his head, clearly. Especially when
that's the thing about it. He can't smell, but he's very, very perceptive. Like, yeah. There's a lot of parts of the movie where he's all like, oh, you don't see that? And then, you know, they're going to the airport, but Ryan Gosling tells him to pull over, and turns out the hotel there. He can't smell, but he's way more perceptive than Russell Crowe is.
True.
Which I guess you would always do the whole. Of course, granted, it does set up the whole tragedy with the gas and the furnace leak, which makes him flawed. Yeah. But he's far more perceptive though.
Yeah, that's true. Which I guess that's what they say, right? If you can't see, your hearing's better. And yeah, things
or
like that.
If you lose one of your senses. Yeah. But of course, granted, I think that the fact that's how he makes up for it, that he can't smell. He's much more perceptive.
Right. So. Well, this leads me to my favorite part. We can talk about, I guess, our favorite parts of the movie. We'll kind of end it like that. Where they're going up the elevator, mm-hmm. and they just figure out...
No, no, no. I said it was a... Why are we gonna... I said it was smart... You know, it'd be... Oh, they said, like, yeah, let's go up the elevator. Let's not go. Let's stay down here. I was like, yeah, he said it was, so we're going to go up there. No, but you said staying down here was a smart move. Yeah, I said it's a smart move. Like, in your shack, going up there is a dumb move. Yeah.
Exactly. And then they talked to the poor guy, the clerk, and he's like, why would I tell you that? He's
like, or like, my brain's a little foggy sometimes. Yeah. And of course, he'll stop doing this. Stop doing what?
Exactly, he yeah.
Smashes his face into the bar.
So now they're gelling. And then they get up there and they just, as soon as the door opens,
they see the guard wheezing because he just had his throat slit.
Yeah.
And then they look across the hall and they see the one guy being shot.
It's like shit's going down. They're like, all right.
And of course they both had the same, we need to leave. And then they go down the elevator and they see some guy being thrown out of the window and falling past the elevator.
Yeah. That's just classic. Like, it's just, I mean, how do you write that? That's, right?
Yeah, because honestly, if that was a modern, they would have went in there, they would have saw the assassin, and then they would have fought, and they would have had like a 15-minute, like, their karate fighting kind of, they would have had that scene for like at least 10 or 15 minutes of then, like, fighting, going through different environments of like the bathroom, and eventually Russell Crowe would kill the assassin. Maybe not even kill the assassin, maybe like...
He almost kills him. He's like so close.
But then the assassin goes down a clothes chute, and that's how he escapes.
Yeah.
And of course Russell Crowe throws a grenade and thing, and of course, then you assume that he's dead.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it have ended. But no, they just saw like, nope, get the fuck out of here. Yeah, that's... Which is way more...
Well, way more impacting.
Yeah, of like, no, we're...
Like that's because that's what I would have... I mean, I wouldn't be in that situation, but the idea is that these guys are running, and they're right behind the action. They're just a little bit too late, and then boom, they're just like, "Oh fuck, all right."
Yeah. Well, no, the fact that they saw the guy, the first guy getting killed, and they saw the second guy getting killed, and they understand. No, let's just leave, and it's almost like the smartest henchman. Like that's that theory of like, I don't know if you. Say you're a henchman for a bad guy, and you see the hero, and he just kills 10 of your friends. And of course, you're gonna run in. No, you're not gonna run in there. You're gonna kind of assess the situation, and maybe I shouldn't run in there and kill this guy. But no, you're a henchman. You go. It's like one of those Zaitochi films. I forget which one it was. You're familiar with Zaitochi, right? Okay. Where usually in the Zaitochi movies, I guess we can't really do that. Kill him! Kill him! And he sends 20 guys. Of course, Zaitochi cuts them all down. And never showed him. He kills the
boss. These guys must really love the cause.
Yeah. And in this one movie where it has this fat Ronin. And Zaitochi just kills like 10 dudes. And the Ronin's just like, I think 5 rows not really worth my life. I'll see you around. Just walks away. Just walks away. The smartest henchman... in the entire series, because most of the guys like, oh, he's just a blind guy, get him. And then of course they go and he cuts down 20 guys, and then like more guys show up. Like, I'm sorry, if I just saw a man slice down 10 of my friends, I'm not gonna go kill that guy.
Yeah,
I'm not that good kind of thing. That's But of course they kind of did the same thing. They saw the situation, they saw the guy getting shot, and they realized we should probably leave. Which, like I said, that's the that's the smart move, and that's the way they left.
I wonder how people be well in these, like if it was a real world thing, how do they become henchmen, kind of thing. I guess it's a whole thing with the mafia too, right? Because I guess they get into. Yeah, I guess that's a whole other thing.
That is a whole different show. We'll cover that in the next episode.
But there's this. This reminds me, kind of the same thing. There's the new Batman. Oh, bring it back to Batman. The new animated series that came out briefly in 2007-2009.
No, I never saw it, actually, no.
So, it's alright, but there's this one scene where Batman is like, you know, with this guy, he's like beating him up or whatever, and the henchman comes in the door, and he's kind of like, okay, what's going on? And he sees Batman, and he goes, alright, and he goes, leaves and just shuts the door, and he walks back, and his boss is like, is everything alright? He's like, everything's fine. Like, he just, like, leaves.
I want to say I've seen that episode. I want to see, like, at least I saw that part where, like, he sees Batman, then he's just like, no, everything's okay. Then just...
Yeah.
I go take a smoke break.
Exactly, he just leaves. Yeah. That's kind of, like, the same idea. I mean, I think it's classic. I mean, what's your... Oh, dude, we didn't even talk about the ant moment.
The ant moment.
When they're driving. Ryan Gosling's driving, and he falls asleep.
Oh, no, the bee moment.
Oh, is that a bee?
A bee. Because they were talking about the bee. Because they were talking about the killer bees.
Oh, right, yeah.
And, of course, he's like, just drive... Of course, that's...
So it's been a while since I watched the movie.
Yeah,
like, that's why I'm foggy on it.
No. That's like I said. I was when you brought this project, I was like, no, I need to watch it. I just finished watching it, you know, and no, they were talking about the killer bees, and then of course, Ryan Gosling falls asleep, and that's kind of the thing. You never know when you fell asleep. You never like, oh, I'm gonna go to either you're gonna go to sleep now, or you just realize, shit, I just fell asleep. He's driving, of course. Russell goes like, "Man, I'm kind of getting tired." And Russell goes, "Just let the car drive by itself, man. It's fine." They talk about like in 10 or 15 years, you know, cars are gonna drive themselves. At least, but this is in the '70s, so. And of course, then the bees like back there smoking. Yeah, man. We don't fly anymore, man. We just drive. The air's all fucked up. And then of course, you like, of course, most people would have realized like, "Holy shit, it's a talking bee." And that's goes like, that's. I think he's... Of course, granted, yes, he falls asleep. And, of course, that's when he crashed into the barricades. But, yeah, that was a really... Like, especially super fluid. They don't even include it. Like, you don't even realize what's happening until they...
And even when they crash, it's kind of dumb luck because it's kind of like... They realize, oh, dude, she's sending us to...
On a wild goose chase,
yeah. And so, I mean, that was my favorite part. Whenever they're... Talking to the woman, was she like a she was a
she well basically
head of water or something?
Chris Lee Brinkley.
Head of the car thing.
Yeah, no, she was the head of the DOJ, the Department of Justice, and that was her assistant. And of course, the assistant was trying to get them out of there so she could send the assassin to go kill them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when we kind of realized. Well, at least that's when I realized that though. The DOJ is in on this as well.
Yeah, and that's a whole noir trope there.
Yeah.
The classic, oh, I need your help, I'll pay you whatever you want, kind of damsel in distress thing. It just happens that she's deep in this.
Yeah, there's much more, like, for a random routine case of just a missing girl, it ends up to be a far-reaching, it's to the higher level
and
of
that's
government, you know?
A classic noir twist right there. It's always, this is always the beginning, and you're always... going down a rabbit hole, and it's just like, oh, I don't want to go down here, but you just keep going and going and going, and before you know it, it's just too late. You're stuck
you're in too deep.
And I think that leads to the ending where Russell Crowe's just like, I don't think Ryan Gosling's character realizes how deep they went. I think he was just kind of like, you know,
oh, we're alive. And that's all he really cared about. He didn't understand the fact that they were knee up against the Department of Justice, what's her name? I want to say Christie Brinkley, but I don't think that's right.
No.
Wasn't she married to Chuck Norris? Like that actress? Someone say it's Christie Brinkley.
Someone will correct us.
Yeah, I guess so. Like I remember because I've seen her a lot. So, of course, I'd look it up, but I hate looking up stuff in the little recordings. But of course, like I said they're you know, DOJ, and she's all like, no, you don't understand. Of course, pure business, if, you know, what's good for Detroit, it's good for America. You know, that's why we can't have catalytic converters.
And if you think about it, how is that any different from the real world with these corporations today?
No, like right now, like net neutrality, they, of course, back in the 90s, the government gave the telecoms like billions of dollars to build high-speed internet infrastructure, and they end up just using it for cell phones. Granted, don't get me wrong, I'm glad that we have our cell phone infrastructure, but high-speed internet would probably, like right now whether it's the fact that the rest of the world has a wave, like Rwanda has better internet than the United States. I don't know, that's like mind-boggling. Like Romania... Like, most of, you know, we have, like, a tenth of what most of the world has. I think, Japan has what, like, last time I heard that it was, like, 400, and I think they're shooting for 450 megabytes or gigabytes. Like, I can't really, I don't remember the thing, but it was way higher than within us. And of course, right now they're trying to dissuade people, like, oh, you don't need high-speed internet, even though the internet's the only really way to get a job anymore. Because honestly, the last time I applied for a job, I went to the newspapers and I filed in the classified ads. I don't want to date myself, but
back in 1935,
back in 2004, I got my job from a news ad, and the job that I had now, I had to apply over the internet. Yeah. Not to mention just once, I had to do it several times. So it's, of course, like I said, though, that's I have to say what I guess short-sighted business people, you know, but like I said, the whole catalytic converters, I bet they went through the same argument of like de-leading gasoline. The same thing of taking CFCs out of like aerosol cans when they wanted to reduce the waste of CDs. Because I don't know if you remember when they used to sell CDs, they'd have the really super long packages.
Yeah.
Now they're just wrapped in cellophane. Pull tabs for Coke. Back in the day, you know, you used to have pull tabs where you just pull the tab and just throw the pull tab away, and people had to do a massive mailing protest trying to get Coke to change it where it's just you pull the tab and it stays on there.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, maybe that's just always the way it's been, the fact that
it has, and that's the case with the human condition. I mean, if I always tell this example where if you're driving by a curve and there's not a rail, it's because no one has died there yet, or they just haven't had the money to put a rail thing. Because typically when you start seeing these safety signs is because something happened, it was a gnarly crash, and you have to put a rail on there. Like, it seems like that's the same thing with anything in the world. Like, oh, this is harming us, people are dying.
I would say that's the reason why we have rules. But the fact that there's a reason why they have open bag eat peanuts, because apparently someone tried, even though someone tried to eat the bag whole, maybe they thought that. But there's a reason why we have rules.
Yeah.
They don't exist for no reason. It's because someone, that's why if you see a sign and it's a very super explicative sign, do not jump in with alligators. It's because somebody tried to jump in with the alligators.
Exactly.
And that the fact that they need that sign to make sure nobody else jumps in.
And liability.
And liability, of course.
Because there's no forward... I feel there's no real forward thinking, or as much as there should be. There's no real critical thinking. Going back to movies, people don't want to think. They want to just go and disengage and watch stuff blow up.
That's why there's only been one Nice Guy movie made. And that's why we have 7, I think now 8 Fast and Furious movies. Like
I only seen like 2 of those movies.
I saw one of those movies, and I'm just like, this movie is fucking ridiculous. And then of course, the surprise, surprise, they made. Of course, granted, if you like those movies, because like, oh, it's a fun comic movie. I'm not judging you. I'm just saying.
If you're 13, okay, you're alright.
I'm just saying, I can understand like watching a movie and just wanting to disconnect. That's fine.
Yeah, and I need those times too. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, like we need like a popcorn movie. Just eat the popcorn, unwind, disconnect. But there's a point to the movie where I like to refer to them as "get the fuck out of here" moments, where you're watching something and you're just. Get the fuck out of here. He's not gonna jump off the car and land perfectly on the roof. No, he's gonna... They're going 80 miles an hour. He's gonna get blown off. No, you're not gonna jump a semi off a bridge and make it successfully. No, they're not going nearly fast enough. Like, get the fuck out of here. If there's too many of those moments, that I can't watch a movie. Like, there was one movie, I can't remember the name of it, at Bradley Cooper. And it had another guy. I forget what the other guy's name, but he was a blonde dude. And they were trying to make it like a James Bond kind of thought. Like, I thought, like, you know, this actually has a potential of being like a series of where these two guys are going on adventures, exotic locations. But there's like too many get the fuck out of here moments. Like, they're trying to where they're racing down the river in a boat, and they're trying to escape bad guys who are shooting at them, and they're gonna explode the boat. So they get cigars. They were smoking cigars because I think. And basically, they take the cigar and they jam it into the fuel line, where eventually the cigar is going to burn down and hit the fuel line and make the boat explode before they jump off. Whatever.
Because that's what happens.
That's what happens. And then I was like, cigars don't work that way. If you smoke a cigar, you know they just blow themselves out. And they thought, it's not a cigarette. Cigarettes do that. And initially, that might have been in the script, where they put a cigarette in there.
But it's cooler to be with cigars. For
smoking cigars. Or there's one moment where they're driving, and they hit it like there's a brick wall. So the blonde guy shoots a hole with it with his AK-47, and they go through the... Get the fuck out of here. I know, like, an AK-47, it doesn't have... It only has 30 bullets, and not to mention 30 bullets isn't enough to actually make a hole in a wall, a brick wall, mind you.
Yeah.
So they could actually drive a car successfully through it. No, get the fuck out of here. And I noticed a lot of movies, you know, like people ignore those. Like, if there's too many of those kind of, like, I can understand if, like, oh no, actually you could do that. That's scientifically possible. Kind of like, oh, that's very interesting. I didn't know you could do that. There, of course, there's people don't want those. They want the crazy. Of course, my favorite is when people try to replicate those stunts. I want to say that, like, after Mission Impossible 2 came out, and, you know, Tom Cruise and the other guy are, like, racing on motorcycles, and they jump out in the middle of the and they hit, and they're wrestling around, that they had several people die after that, because they were racing motorcycles, decided to jump off towards each other, and then just, you know, they collided, and of course they had broken ribs. A lot of people were getting injured. Same thing with the Fast and Furious, coincidentally. Like, a lot of people, like, after they watched the movie, they started racing around the movie, the parking lot, the movie theater, and there was a huge increase of accidents. Yeah, because people thought they were fucking, you know, speed
geared
racer.
Geared up, ready to go.
Because I got a Corolla, and fuck yeah, it's Japanese import. Hell yeah, you know. But unfortunately, they said... people like, you know, and like I said, I think it's just all a deal with taste. Like, a friend of mine, she likes to watch, like, we were watching Pulp Fiction, and she did not like Pulp Fiction. But, you know, I love Pulp Fiction. You love Pulp Fiction. It's a very, you know, it's...
Pulp's very similar to noir.
Yeah, it is. Very, very gritty. Very, but honestly, there's some people who don't like... They don't like something that's kind of too complex. It's just maybe they can't just wrap their noodle around it. Maybe it's just
they just don't get it.
They just didn't get it. Unfortunately, that happens to people. They're like they're if it's too complex of an idea, it doesn't penetrate or absorb.
Yeah.
So they can't really get as much as say as another person does.
Which the other guys.
And I admit, I like the other guys better the second time to watch than the first time.
Well, you start paying attention and you start realizing how great of a movie is with the dialogue, the acting. I mean, it has really subtle beats when it comes to the suspense also.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when that guy goes to go kill the daughter... Actually, I think he's after the girl in yellow.
Yeah, he's after Amelia. Like I said, they're trying to get the film.
And then that girl that's on the phone, and she's just gossiping, and they're trying to call him, but they won't answer, and they're on their way there. Like, it's really good suspense. Like, you hate that little girl. You're just like, and then she gets thrown through the window.
Oh, that was... Yeah, of course, granted, I was thinking, why don't they just, like, go to a hotel? They know where they live. It's, of course, granted, honestly, that hindsight's 20/20, but yeah.
Yeah, they probably weren't thinking. They're just in this wild goose chase, and they're just like, what do we do? And then they figure it out, and they're like, oh, crap. And it's just, in my opinion, it's really smart writing. The suspense is awesome, because you know you've heard about this guy, and then you see him, and you're just like, oh, dude. This is the real deal.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing I was going to say is that it has kind of like this Inspector Gadget kind of feel. If you think about it, because that girl,
she's Penny.
Yeah.
Oh wow! No, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And so, and it's in the 70s too, like, you know, tipping on the 80s kind of stuff. I don't know if that was kind of put in there, or it's just a nice little, what should I say, coincidence. But I kind of got that vibe.
Well, like, honestly, they probably didn't mean to do that on purpose. Because, honestly, like I said, it is the little girl. She is very smart. But, of course, there is times where she does get... There is times where she gets in a little over her head.
Mm-hmm.
No, I actually didn't really think about it. Of course, granted, that's the little girl's honestly trying to make Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling. Excuse me. Getting him confused with Deadpool. That's one of the reasons why he's relatable and he's human, because he has a daughter and he's trying to take care of his daughter.
Exactly.
And then, but the fact that she probably takes care of him is just as much as he takes care of her.
Exactly.
But, you know, I didn't really think about the whole Inspector Gadget. All they need is, like, go Gadget something, or Dr. Claw, but...
The real cool thing is the cars. I mean, that Trans Am was pretty nice.
Oh, that Trans Am was fat. My brother, like, he actually bought a 1981 Camaro. And that was a great car. The only thing is, it did have a V8, and it did get 8 gallons to a mile.
Yeah, that's what's so those. And people forget about that. Yeah, muscle cars.
Yeah, they were talking, especially they were talking about the oil embargo at the time. Like, imagine, most cars get 30, 40 miles a gallon. At least my car gets 34.
Yeah.
But if you, like I said, but I also have an 88 Bronco that only gets 8.
Yeah.
So that's actually the reason why I decided to buy a new car, the fact that, like, I was going to pay just as much in gas as a new car payment.
Yeah.
So I can imagine back in the 70s where your car gets 7 or 8 miles a gallon and you have to fill up every, you have to buy 20, maybe 30 gallons of gas every week. I can imagine how, you know. Of course, that's probably another discussion of gung ho, why, you know, the Japanese came in with a bunch of smaller cars and just decimated the car market.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that kind of sums up the other guys, because they're just really having these nice little cars and they're getting rid of the Cadillac Converter really well. But if you haven't seen this movie, do yourself a favor. We're going to be doing a lot of this stuff, like, talk about...
Yeah, we're going to, like I said, the next movie we're probably going to do is probably Chinatown.
Maybe.
I was talking about doing some...
Twilight Zone
episodes.
That, like, might be the next one.
Probably. Yeah, I think so, because that's good, especially now in these perilous times.
Yeah.
We'll sneak
those in the middle of all these things.
Of course, I'm going to have to take notes and make sure, like, we actually say them, so they, like... Watch this, or on Netflix. That way you know what the hell we're talking about. Unfortunately, the nice guys, that's either DVD or HBO. If you have HBO, unfortunately, they took it off of Amazon and they took it off of Hulu, unless you have HBO.
Or just buy it.
You can always support the cause by buying it, which is Blu-ray $13.99.
Which, bring it back, man. Bring it back.
All right. We're going to... Okay. All right.
I'm saying, like, bring it back. Bring back the movie.
Bring back the movie.
Like, make it a cult following. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it would. And like I said, maybe a couple of years down the line, they'll make another movie, but it's set in the 80s.
But if anybody's listening to this, mainly probably, I don't think Nate's even gonna listen to this.
I know, you never know. Yeah.
But just comment. Let us know what we got wrong, because we probably got a lot of wrong. Tell us if you liked it, or if you've seen it, or what other movies we should really check out. We're going to take a look at classics. I mean, it might be even back in the 50s, 40s, or it might be classics that we feel are modern classics. Like The Other Guys, to me, in my opinion, is a modern classic. Or even stuff in the 70s, 80s, whatever. And it can be TV shows. It can be anything.
We should do a show about Adam 12.
Oh, dude. Dude, that's throwback. Yeah. All right, guys.
All right. Thank you very much, and have a good night.